On today's Hot Zone, we're going to take a look back at some of my previous commentary on depolicing, that is, defunding the police. We're going to see how well those comments aged on this episode of The Hot Zone.
This is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
Hey folks, Chuck Holton here. Thanks for watching Hot Zone. I am still enjoying the wonderful weather, beautiful days here in West Virginia. If you hear gunshots, that's because people can do that here. We live out in the country, and you can shoot anything you want, anywhere you want, as long as you're not within 300 feet of a dwelling. And so people are out here taking advantage of that freedom to get in a little target practice. My neighbors down the road here have been shooting here for a little while. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about this defund the police movement we keep hearing so much about in the news. And there's a lot of confusion about it. There's a lot of anger. There's a lot of people who just aren't even sure what that means. Well, I think in order to really understand what that means, I want to look back at San Francisco, because San Francisco has been pushing to defund their police departments for quite some time. And back a couple of years ago, when I was working for NRA TV, I hosted the show one day and I talked about the depolicing push in San Francisco. Here's what that looked like.
Well, we depend on the good men and women of law enforcement to come running when bad things happen. They spend their days and nights putting themselves between the worst of society and the innocent. But over the last several years, we've seen a decidedly unhealthy and dangerous trend as cops have increasingly become the targets of the very people they're sworn to protect. And what's worse, many politicians and city leaders have weaponized that hatred and made the police convenient scapegoats whenever they're called on to use force in a violent encounter. It's become a major issue for cops around the country to enforce the law and stay alive, but risk being crucified by a hostile city council or else to look the other way and just go along to stay safe and go home at the end of your shift. It's a choice no cop should ever have to make. In San Francisco last week, I spoke to Doug Wiley. He's a senior contributing writer to Police One, which is a great website, and a co-host of the podcast called Policing Matters. We talked about this issue and about what it's like for regular people living in the Bay Area in California. Check it out.
I think in the post-Ferguson era, we're seeing a trend with officers individually and agencies more broadly doing what I call depolicing, which is disengaging from proactive law enforcement. They fear repercussions, whether it's legal or social or what have you. They fear acting proactively will put them in a beef. And so agencies are broadly saying, hey, there's things that we don't want you to do anymore. We don't want you to enforce fill-in-the-blank law, the cigarette single laws, or all of those things. Or individual officers slow rolling to a call, making sure that they arrive after everything is done. The consequence of that is increased crime. Murder rates are down, but there's a caveat to that. Medical care is considerably better than it used to be. But you have property crimes across the country in many places going up. Break-ins of cars, burgles, home invasions, that type of thing. I think that law enforcement officers across the country, not just uniquely here, are very fearful that they are expendable. So there's a new law under consideration in California that would change from what has been known as the objectively reasonable standard, which has been for decades now the standard by which an officer's use of force is judged. Supreme Court ruled in Graham v. Conner, you can't add facts after the fact. You can't judge with 20/20 hindsight. You have to figure what would that officer have felt and saw and known at the time. In California, the law would change to be necessary force, not reasonable force, but necessary force, which opens the door to second guessers. And frankly, it goes against the United States Supreme Court. The law of the land across the country is objectively reasonable. So the outcome of that, if it were to pass, let's say, for example, it does, is it would go to the courts here in the state, and it would go to the Supreme Court. And I'm not sure the Supreme Court would even hear it, because they would say, we've already ruled on this. So it's It's a political move, and it's one to appease people who are trying to change law enforcement policy and procedure. But we're in liberal California. It might pass. The law enforcement officers who have maybe 15 plus years on here in San Francisco would be inclined to say, I'm going to choose a different career, which really just the end result is that you're putting the people you're trying to protect at greater risk. I think that there are things you can take from either side and put together compromise, reasonable, rational policies and procedures for police that protect the law enforcement officer from being beefed, from being, jacked up on a false charge of use of force or excessive use of force, but also allow for police to do their jobs in a way that reflects the desires of the citizens that they're policing. And that's community policing 101. Here in San Francisco, we have a very unique problem. We don't get inclement weather. We'll get some rain in the wintertime, but, it's not a bad place to be homeless and drug addict. And homeless drug addicts are breaking in cars at an alarming rate. They have changed the laws, but they've also de-emphasized, again, de-policing, de-emphasized enforcement of laws that do still exist. Heroin's still illegal, but it's really not enforced when it's on the street. It's really not enforced in people's private homes. So that's what the example of de-policing is. It bothers me enormously that people like elected officials and celebrities in Hollywood, other residents of California, are surrounded by armed guards, armed security, and I'm not allowed to protect myself in the same way. That makes me feel that they feel I'm less of a person to protect, and it's bothersome. But it's indicative of also what they believe. That they believe they're more important than you are.
They are more important than you are, and you're less of a person to protect. That's exactly what these elected representatives and these celebrities think about you. These that go around with armed security all day long and spend their time calling for your rights to be infringed. Now, Doug was a great help in explaining the pressures that are being faced by citizens and law enforcement out these days in California. And he got me thinking about another event a year ago that could have ended very, very badly, but it didn't, because of the selfless efforts of men and women who answered the call to protect their fellow citizens. Listen to United States Representative Steve Scalise talk about that fateful day.
For far too long these last few years, we've seen media portray our law enforcement in a negative light. And God help if even somebody did everything by the book and there's an uprising and your law enforcement officers are targeted. Well, I was targeted a year ago last week, and it was a deranged gunman shows up at a baseball practice and decides he wants to kill a bunch of Republicans. And we've seen so many of these tragedies, school shootings, church shootings. All across this country, we've seen these tragedies. And this tragedy would have been no different. You'd still be talking about 14, 15 members of Congress executed. Except that didn't happen. And it didn't happen because we had men and women in law enforcement that were there that day to counter the shooter. I'm here today because of the brave, heroic actions of the United States Capitol Police and the local Virginia police who came to my rescue and the rescue of all of my colleagues to confront a shooter who had a semi-automatic weapon, a rifle, with unlimited ammunition and a handgun. They were heavily outgunned, but they take their mission seriously. They take that call to service seriously. And they went at the shooter. They were shot at themselves, and in the case of my two Capitol Police deputies who were protecting me that day, they both got shot in the shootout. And they continued to go after the shooter until, thank God, they took him down. And so what could have easily been yet one more of those tragedies wasn't a day we celebrate, but every person that went out there on that field that day lived except the shooter because of the men and women in law enforcement. So I can't thank you all enough for the sacrifices that you make every day, the stories that you don't hear enough of, Because if you want to really hear and read a story of heroism and how law enforcement does the job every day that doesn't get told, the bad story is going to get told all the time and it'll be the lead story. But when your men and women suit up and put on that badge and they go out there and they protect a community from something bad, rarely do you really hear that story.
You're right, you don't hear that story often enough, but this is why we hold our policemen and women in such high regard. And we should all do what we can to make their lives easier, not harder. So when I see, for example, protesters climbing on the Statue of Liberty, and it takes law enforcement officers from the National Park Police risking their lives to climb up there and get that crazy person down, I think it shows a level of disrespect that we all need to call out whenever we see it. So let's do that more. Between you and me, I think that we can't support our law enforcement enough. Okay, so this is at least 2 or 3 years old, and it looks like it is coming to fruition around the country now and not just in San Francisco. It didn't work out so well in San Francisco. Tons of crime, massive amount of violence, and absolutely horrible place to live now. The rich are fleeing San Francisco like their lives depend on it, because they do. And while we're on the topic of how well commentary ages, I want to point out another little commentary I made back in 2017. This is July, I think, 17th or 19th, 2017. And I was talking about the violence in South Africa, because as you may remember, I went to South Africa last year to do the reporting on this. But back in 2017, I'd been reading about it and hearing about violence directed against whites, racial violence, specifically against whites in that country. And I wanted to know more about it. I read and I researched and I talked to people in South Africa, and I did a report on that and basically made a comparison to the Black Lives Matter movement and simply said, if we don't get a handle on the racial disharmony in our country, we are going to see violence against whites, specifically directed against whites by Black Lives Matter folks, affiliated people, and by politicians encouraging it in our country. I got crucified in the social media on this. Media Matters, who actually saved a copy of the video for me, and I appreciate that. Media Matters wrote a whole article about what a racist I was to even suggest that violence might come from Black Lives Matter, from that movement, that to even suggest that when people loot and burn cars and do stupid things, that the police might have to get involved to put a stop to that. And absolutely crucified. I got ratioed on Twitter out the wazoo. Well, that article on Media Matters didn't age so well. My comments certainly did. And I have to say, I'm really sad to have been right about this one. Check it out.
Race relations are strained here in America after 8 years of Barack Obama, but nowhere is near as bad as it is in South Africa, where white farmers are being tortured and killed almost every day in racist violence. It is a warning for the United States that you will never hear from the mainstream media in this country. Veteran Army Ranger and Frontlines correspondent Chuck Holton joins me with more on this. Chuck, I know you've been looking into this particularly and doing some research, and really the things that we're starting to learn are frightening, and I guess it's not shocking that the mainstream media is not talking about this.
Right. You know, the parallels between what's happening in South Africa and the blatant racism and violence that we're seeing from people like the Black Lives Matter crowd, from people like Louis Farrakhan and his minions, is happening in spades in South Africa. The violence against farmers is being called for by government officials. It's being celebrated by politicians. And you know, the scary thing is, it's kind of a warning for what could happen in the United States if we continue to let this get out of control, to go down this path of just this racial tension, this racial hatred that is being foisted on the American culture by the Black Lives Matter crowd. You know, I was at this very peaceful march over the weekend, this women's march, and there were a lot of Black Lives Matter people there. And, you know, when you talk to people, they're all angry about this video that Dana Loesch put out that said that, hey, when you go around and break things and burn cars and spray paint buildings, that you leave the police no choice but to do their job. And somehow that was equated as a call for violence. That's not a call for violence. That's saying when you act like an idiot, the police come and do what the police are supposed to do when you act like an idiot, and that is arrest you. And, you know, somehow, like this guy on Fox last night, on Martha McCallum's show, somehow trying to say that that's us calling for violence, it's exactly the opposite. It's us calling out the violent and saying this has to stop. And if you want to see why it has to stop, you look at South Africa. Over between 3,000 and 4,000 white South Africans have been killed in the most horrific ways, brutalized, raped, tortured, drugged behind cars, had drills taken to them, some really horrific things.
And Chuck, one common theme here with what's going on in South Africa is that it is very hard to get a firearm now in South Africa as well to protect yourself. And right. Many of these people that are being victimized need that kind of protection. When we see what's going on in America, specifically California, look, there's another bill in California to limit the one gun a month plan that they have in California to all guns, not just handguns. If you don't think your Second Amendment rights can be destroyed, just look at California. Just look at Europe. Just look at South Africa. And once they take the guns away from you, now look at what's going on. They operate with impunity to do whatever they want to the citizenry, and we're seeing that in South Africa now.
All right, that's all I've got for the Hot Zone today, folks. Thanks for watching, and thanks for being a part of it. I'm going to start traveling again here before too long, but for the time being, I'm going to just enjoy being at home with my family. And so I hope you are, too. Take care.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.